let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. Based on the real events at the end of World War II, the thrilling military novel Flight of the Valkyrie by Arthur Cantrell has increased relevance, especially in today's climate of terrorism. Flight of the Valkyrie centers on an attempt by doomed Nazi hierarchy to infiltrate the Manhattan Project and capture the newly developed atomic bomb, intending to use it as leverage to mitigate Germany's surrender terms. The gripping story has all the earmarks of a great espionage thriller. A cast of endlessly complex characters, the fresh and distinctive voice of this first-time novelist, and the note of authenticity of the best historical fiction. Arthur is an oncologist making his home in Arkansas. A retired member of the National Guard, he served for over two decades, achieving the rank of colonel. His decorations for distinguished service include the Meritorious Service Medal, Army Commendation Medal, and Global War on Terrorism Medal. While he previously published in a medical journal, Flight of the Valkyrie is his first novel. Arthur Cantrell with us on This Week in America. Arthur, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
I'm glad to be with you.
This is such a fascinating read, a thrilling read. It's difficult not to go from page to page, and all of a sudden you're going through a number of chapters because the book is so compelling. Talk about where this idea came from, this story that we'll talk about in the course of the program today, during the course of the program today, that's written in the book, Flight of the Valkyrie. Where did this idea for a book come from?
Several different routes. One, there is a group of us who are professionals, lawyers, doctors, dentists, who have an interest in history, and most of us have also served in the military. And we like to get together every so often and discuss alternative history or how history could have turned out and kind of more realistically. And examples I would that we talked about would be like in 1940 when Hitler let the British escape Dunkirk, what would have happened if he'd stopped that? And another is Pearl Harbor, if Admiral Nagumo had done what his orders told him to do, which was to also destroy the oil supplies at Pearl Harbor and hunt our carriers down. World War II, I think, still would have been won by us, but it would have been a very different from what we know today. The other interest I had was my father was a Marine in World War II in the Pacific, and he had most of the battles except Iwo Jima and Okinawa, and that was because he had malaria. But he took part in some special operations. I'm not sure that it was with the Marine Raiders, but it was virtually commando action. And so I have had an interest in special operations, guerrilla, and black ops histories as well.
You know, it's interesting going about historical fiction. Talk about the challenges of that, because it is fiction and we understand that. It's historical. You've got people reading that are history buffs. In fact, the book is widely recommended for history buffs. Talk about the challenges of historical fiction and trying to maintain a good story and also have some historical accuracy to the context.
Well, that means going in and trying to verify things as best you can.
Yes.
And I would like readers to keep in mind, I wrote this before a lot of this information was available on the Internet. There are many of the historical characters, even down to the captains, actually existed, whether it was KG-200 or the people of the SS Jagdverbande, which was the SS commandos. So one, you need to take a look at this, read up on the weapons, because, you know, it's not good enough to me to say that, well, there are a column of Russian tanks were coming. Well, you know, what was it? T-34s? Was it the Joseph Stalins or KVs? And even there were, you know, different types of T-34s. So you need to, you know, make it believable. How, you know, the tanks that were going to be there, the rifles that the Germans were going to use. Another little challenge was the geography. I fortunately got a 1938 Atlas off a relative, and could you look at the place names in Eastern Germany and Prussia where they still had the original German names, unlike today where a lot of these places are under Polish or even Russian occupation. For example, Gdansk, you know, you don't want to use Gdansk when that name wasn't around.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
38, so trying to get the names, and also piercing together a route that the, for example, the survivors of the Task Force East would have taken to get away when their defensive position was declared a fortress, and of course 800 men could do very little against a division of Russians or however many they threw against them there.
Well, this was really exhaustive research on your part. It's hard to remember what life was like without the internet, but you had to like basically do libraries
exactly.
And do research rather than just sit behind the desk and pull this stuff up. How many?
And I had one or two people who had served. Actually, one of my sources was a retired intelligence type who was kicked out of the Army in 1943 because he had rheumatic heart disease, but he had a good brain and was picked up by the OSS instead. And he stayed with them when whatever they became in 1946, and then later that became the CIA, like in 1947. OSS didn't directly go to CIA, as some people think. But anyway, this guy was there for all of that, and he gave me some rather unique insights.
I was going to say, what a valuable resource he had to be. And you can tell from listening to Arthur the meticulous research that went into this book, which makes it so compelling, Flight of the Valkyrie, a novel by Arthur Cantrell. This is a republished book, now available for sale at its lowest retail price, available for sale at all Amazon sites, at Barnes & Noble, Page Turner's Bookstore, Chapters Indigo in Canada, Waterstones in the UK, Booktopia in Australia, New Zealand, and a lot more, also available for sale as an ebook, paperback, and hardcover. Let's get into this story because it's fascinating. We go back to the last days of World War II. I sort of set it up with the tease in the beginning, talking about the Nazi hierarchy trying to basically pull one over at the end. Talk about the storyline, because it's a fascinating storyline. And for most people, unless they've taken read history recently, they tend to either not know or forget about what happened during that period.
Well, the basis for this on the main part is the position that Heinrich Himmler was in. Now, I think almost all the Nazi hierarchy was realistic that this was not going to end well. And people like Himmler had to know that they had a bullseye on their back. They
yes.
were going to have to answer for what they did when the Allies were victorious. People underestimate Himmler. Albert Speer made the comment that anyone trying to take a simple view, I'm paraphrasing, a simple view of Himmler's actions would have no idea. He said there was no end to the deviousness of the man. There was a book called The Mysterious Death of Himmler, which was a part of what I allude, the part about Himmler's so-called death is based on the information in this book, which was very well done, where Himmler may have actually survived the war, and we may revisit that later, I don't know. But the things that Himmler was capable of planning in advance was incredible, and that is a book I would recommend. But anyway, going to January 1945, Himmler knows that he is in a bad situation, and he is looking for a way out. And also, during this time, one needs to also realize that the Nazis were fighting each other. This had gone on for years, and it's something that Hitler wanted. He didn't want any person becoming too strong to threaten his position. So he encouraged these vicious free-for-alls that the ultimate one was the Rum Putsch back in 1944 when the leadership of the SA was stood up against the wall and shot. That had not happened since then, but it doesn't mean that they still weren't after each other. And Himmler, for the longest time, thought that Martin Bormann was his supporter and friend. Turned out Bormann was undermining Himmler. So Himmler had several things. He had Bormann undermining him, setting him up to failure, and having him discredited in Hitler's eyes. And then Himmler also had to worry about what the heck was going to happen to him when the Allies won. So Himmler was making plans for escape routes. There's people who know a little bit about the aftermath of the war may recall there was an organization called Odessa that was responsible mainly for getting SS out of Europe that were war criminals or hiding them somewhere. And Himmler was up to the neck in this to preserve himself. Along those lines, another thing that is underappreciated about the Germans is they ran some incredible intelligence programs against the Soviets. The Soviets did likewise. In the novel, and it's very well possible something like this could have happened, there is a spy that is high up in the Russian security services, and he's in a position to know about the information that the NKVD has obtained in the United States about the Manhattan Project. This is relayed ultimately to Himmler. There was intermediate organizations involved, like Foreign Armies East under Reinhard Gehlen, who later headed West German intelligence. But anyway, it makes its way back to Himmler, and Himmler realizes both the threat this has, but also the potential. And so he calls upon his chief commando officer, Otto Skorzeny, who, for those who have a little bit of World War II knowledge, and those that do, know that he rescued Mussolini in 1943 and also later was responsible for the abduction of Admiral Horthy in about August or September 1944, and that kept Hungary on the side of the Germans throughout the remainder of the war. So Skorzeny is involved, and he is asked to form a group of commandos to be flown to the United, or be sent to the United States. They don't know how they're going to get there yet, and infiltrate the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the goal is to infiltrate the project and to capture the newly developed atomic bomb that came out of Manhattan Project.
Remember, the bomb hasn't been developed yet. The Germans are actually having to hope that the bomb is developed.
Yes, yes. And then they plan on using that as leverage. This is all in the book, Flight of the Valkyrie. This is a novel by Arthur Cantrell, our guest on This Week in America. You can link on and get information on the book by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Talk about the process of infiltrating, because it's fascinating how they were able to do this.
That is probably the most dangerous aspect for a spy, a commando, anything like Black Ops.
Yes, and you could feel that that sense of danger with the espionage of the book Flight of the Valkyrie. Talk about that, because that's really a perilous journey they were on.
And it's I'll use some examples. That is based on a book about KG-200, the secret German Luftwaffe unit for doing Black Ops. They flew several missions into Russia, and from reading the accounts of the pilots, that was the, landing, taking off under fire when things went wrong. That was no fun for them. And so I guess it's okay to mention that the Germans are flown into the United States rather than landing by submarine. That had been attempted by four, and why I don't mention it, but because, sometimes you're trying to assume that some people know a little bit about and that you don't have to explain everything.
Yes.
Every time they had been landed by submarines, they ended up getting captured, or the Americans are onto them pretty quickly. Now, the art of infiltration here, this was based on several things. the Viking flying boat would have been the ideal craft, because this could carry up to 80 armed men, and along with vehicles, and they had the range. In fact, one of them flew within range of New York City, I think, in 1944. So, I mean, they had the range. You know, incredible as that may seem. But the trick on infiltrating, one, if you're going to land in uniform, and the Germans would typically, at least in the West, they would maybe have their German uniforms, or more likely have them on initially in case things went wrong, and therefore claim protection of Geneva Convention.
Yes.
Once they got ashore, then they're going to be 100% American, because this was based on the actions of the Brandenburg Division. And that first chapter, I don't want to digress too much, where they go into Russia and basically take over that town of Maykov and run the Russians out of the town, actually happened. And that's based on some recollections of Otto Skorzeny. That action under Adrian von Fekrasam did happen, and that was put in there to set the stage for the rest of the book. Getting back to the infiltration, the other thing is, what do you pose as? There are several different things. It's just not the uniforms. The uniforms have to be accurate. Germans arrested spies either because they had their chevrons on the wrong shoulder. In one case, the Brandenburgers gunned down a bunch of Russians in German uniform because they had their decorations in the wrong places. So you better have even your shoelaces in the right place and the right color. So that's one, getting the uniforms accurate. You needed English speakers, which was a problem for the Germans in the Battle of the Bulge. So, you know, you're going to have people at the front of the column, particularly your officers, who can speak English. Secondly, people posing as officers. That was always a little tricky because the officers in any army, a little bit higher than enlisted, are supposed to have a certain set of social skills. So if you can't behave right posing as an officer, you got a problem right off the bat. And the other thing, what are you posing as? Are you infantry, artillery? In this case, chosen as MPs. The Germans used that in the Battle of the Bulge, as you may recall. That was in the movie, and it's been in two movies about the Bulge, or actually three I can think of now. Yeah. Where the Germans, you know, dressed up as MPs and cause untoward chaos, not the kind that happened in Maykov, but it showed what could be happening. The other reason, and I'm apologize to people who've been in the military service, but back then, MPs were not always considered the brightest people either.
So okay.
They would be. But all that comes into play on how you're going to infiltrate. The other thing was, in the case of the, particularly the deal with the Germans, where it's the end of the war, they're falling apart. No one would expect them to do something like this. You know, how many Americans even knew about the Manhattan Project?
Yes.
Very few. The other thing is the surprise, and then three, they already had a few, I don't know if you could really call them double agents, because the one agent, again, I don't want to give away all the book or his name, that had been sent in, had turned himself into the FBI, was still actually working for the Germans. And he completely fooled the FBI. In fact, that was not known until about 1960, when Ladislaw Farrago was reviewing German intelligence records for his book, Game of the Foxes, and saw...
Interesting.
There were the messages he sent for the FBI, but then there was a different... So the Germans knew what that was going to say. Then there were the different messages sent on a different day with a different code, and no one had bothered to look at that until he did in the 1960s.
You know, all of the information that we're talking about during the course of the program, and we're a couple of minutes left in the show, it's gone by way too quickly, but all of that detail, all of that information is what makes this page, the book, the pages literally jump up at you as you're reading. It's the book is The Flight of the Valkyrie, a novel by Arthur Cantrell, our guest on the program. How long did it take you to write this? I'm thinking this was a project that probably took, a number of years from start to finish?
Depends on how you want to cut it up. I actually wrote most of the outline during my trip to Hawaii, back and forth. And then, as I said, I worked on about a page a day.
Yes.
Now, sometimes I didn't. And the other thing on this is I bought models. I bought books on I've got a book on Russian uniforms for World War II because I wanted to see what an NKVD uniform looked like. So besides the book, I've got probably about $1,000 worth easily of militaria that I reviewed to make sure I got this right. Just, you know, talking about the tanks, you know, not only that, you look at the angle, what the planes look like facing you. Probably 2 years from the time I started, I really got a finished product that was readable.
Well, this is immensely readable. At the end, without saying too much, it sort of closes with another story, another day. Will there be a follow-up? What are you working on now?
That is the planned title of the next book.
Yeah, I love that. Again, I'm not going to give away too much, but yeah, you'll get to the end and you'll go, wait a minute, this is the last page, it can't be over. And then you're hopeful that means there's going to be a continuation and that will be the next
story.
Everyone
who has read it wants to see a continuation. And then I'll give you a clue that it has to do with the Japanese atomic bombs. And the only thing I will say about that is, besides it being relevant today, again, this was information provided to me by, this guy was actually a patient of mine, who he was talking about the Japanese atomic bombs to me one day. I kind of thought, well, he's up in his 80s. He's a little senile. I'm not going to say anything. Guy was obviously smart and picked up on what I was saying. He picked up, brought me a book the following week called Japan's Secret War, detailing that. And let's say that changed how I ended the book.
Interesting. And we will see the follow-up. A minute or so left here. I mentioned in the beginning, this is a first-time novel for you, and that's hard to believe because you are so good at what you do in setting the scene. Talk about how you went about balancing that. I mean, you've got a story that's based on real events. You've got these characters, and you're developing the characters. You're capturing what the war was like at the time, the confusion in the final days of World War II. And you captured everything. That had to be difficult to juggle the emotions and the reality of what was happening on the ground at the time.
Well, I'll give you a clue. My father was involved in some very heavy fighting in the Pacific. I know he was at Saipan, and he was about the sole survivor out of a squad. I mean, he was in charge of machine gun position, and, you know, with a 50 caliber in the middle, two 30 calibers on the side, and he was the only one who survived. And so I kind of witnessed how he would feel about describing some things, and some things he wouldn't talk about. And I've talked to other veterans, and you get the idea of who were there because of the way they talk or they don't want to talk about
right.
it. But you get the idea of... Plus, my father left me... about 50 photos related to World War II, 30 of them combat, serious combat. And, you know, I had to get an idea of this from a tangential way, not because I've never been in combat, but I've listened to the stories, I've listened to the feeling of these guys. So I think by being a good listener, I've been able to morph that into... you know, how these people felt.
And, listening and observing, and you've done a great job of being a sponge with that and then working it into the book. You've had the opportunity to work with Page Turner Press and Media and working on this book. By the way, the book cover is just excellent. It really sort of sets the stage for what you're going to read about during the course of the book, Flight of the Valkyrie. Talk about the experience working with Page Turner Press and Media.
It was very pleasant. I think they did a good job of helping me edit it, this because, you know, my expertise is physician, first-time writer. You're crazy to call yourself an expert. But I have had the military experience and listening to people. And I think they really listened to me. We would go over things because obviously some of these people had not been in the military, but they, as you say, they were good listeners. We talked things over on how things should really, what they should say. And then, as you say, the cover, I don't know the person who actually did the design, but whoever he was, he obviously captured the flavor of the book. We had to make some modifications. And I kind of hated it because the first one looked so nice, but they had an American warplane down at the bottom of where the Viking flying boat is.
Yes.
The bottom. The problem was that one didn't show up till 1947. So, you know, that had to go.
Okay.
But damn, it looked good. I hated to change.
A stickler for details, just like you did throughout the book. They've done an excellent job of taking your work and being able to merchandise and market the cover is excellent.
And the back of the book where they have the Russian soldiers attacking, you can just imagine the terror the Germans probably felt on the other side seeing something like this headed towards them. I mean, it was a very pleasant process. Again, the only problem was it takes time, but, you know, I wanted a good product out there. I think they did that. They certainly listened to me. And then if you notice in the chapters, the first of each chapter has a picture of the plane, and you know, that kind of sets each chapter off as well.
It does. It is a remarkable job. That's Page Turner Press and Media that worked with Arthur on the book. And the book is Flight of the Valkyrie. It's a republished book now available for sale at its lowest retail price. It's available for sale at all Amazon sites, at Barnes & Noble, at Page Turner's bookstore, chapters Indigo in Canada, Waterstones in the UK, Booktopia in Australia and New Zealand, a lot more. Also available for sale as an ebook, paperback, and hardcover. And I guarantee you, once you pick it up, you're not going to want to set it down. And when you do, you'll know that there's going to be another one that'll be coming along here fairly soon. So it's Flight of the Valkyrie, a novel by Arthur Cantrell. Arthur, it was a pleasure having a chance to read the book and talk about it on the program. Good luck with the next project, and thank you for being with us on the program.
My pleasure, and I might note that I have others planned, and I've actually was invited out to Hollywood once over the book, so hopefully even more.
I was just going to say, this is so visual that I would love to see this as a motion picture, and hopefully that will evolve as well. Again, Flight of the Valkyrie is the name of the book, a novel by Arthur Cantrell. Information available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're taking a station break, and we'll be right back with more of today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.